There are few options for low-wage workers to advance themselves in the U.S. economy. Typically, this is how minimum wage workers ask their employers for a raise.
No justice! No work! No justice! No work!
They demonstrate, like these fast food workers in Philadelphia yesterday, part of a nationwide effort to organize vulnerable service workers and get better pay.
They don't offer us any benefits, and they want us, you know, to work long hours without breaks, and it's just not enough.
Not even close to enough for Subway sandwich shop employee Justice Wallace there. The minimum wage is slowly rising in communities around the nation. Seattle may soon become the first community with a minimum wage of $15 an hour. But will employers comply? Have they even complied with current wage mandates? Low-wage warehouse workers in California this week won a case for $21 million in back pay brought against a contractor for Walmart. Skimming the wages of low-wage workers or simply not paying for hours worked is not hard to get away with. Construction, garment manufacturing, restaurants, and home health care workers are often immigrants and find themselves vulnerable to bullying by their employer. Myron Levin is the founder and editor of an investigative news site, Fair Warning. He says low-wage workers fear reporting wage theft, which means employers are tempted to reap all kinds of economic benefits.
If you're not paying even the minimum wage, such as it is now, you save money. Overtime violations are rampant. They're supposed to receive a time and a half after 40 hours in a week. And in certain industries, that's just very widely ignored. Then certain kinds of violations occur because of misclassifying workers as independent contractors. And if you do that and get away with it, you save on Medicare and Social Security, unemployment taxes, and workers' compensation premiums.
And what about appealing to the wage and hour division at the Department of Labor? There's a federal institution designed to possibly correct some of these abuses.
Well, they do enforcement for certain. And, you know, by their records, they've put about $1 billion in back wages back in the pockets of workers who are underpaid over the last 5 years or so. But they really don't have enough investigators to police this as effectively as they might. The number of investigators they have fell to a very low ebb under the Bush administration. They've ramped up their hiring, their staffing somewhat under Obama, but they still have fewer investigators than they did in the late 1970s when, you know, the size of the workforce was much smaller and the number of establishments to be monitored was much smaller.
I was surprised to learn that the garment industry may have a 93% rate of wage theft, and some of the garment employers are pretty ingenious in the ways they falsify their payroll.
Yes. In one case, they found that a string of these garment shops were using a kind of software that falsified, automatically converted underpaid wages, really, into an appearance of compliance by taking piecework rates that fell below minimum wage and didn't provide overtime for these employees who worked very, very long weeks. And converted them to a fictional record of compliance with minimum wage and overtime rules.
How do workers, go about getting back wages, paid to them if they find themselves in this situation?
Well, they complain, to authorities, to the Wage and Hour Division, or if they're in a state that actually tries to enforce these laws, complain to them. I mean, one of the things is it is very much a complaint-driven system. And you have a population of workers that are low-skilled in many instances, that are immigrants and that are undocumented in many cases, and they're afraid that the only thing that will happen if they file a complaint is that they'll be fired or reported to immigration. And one thing that we encountered is a number of instances where this is exactly what happened when employees complained. They were threatened with being turned over to immigration, or an investigation commenced and employers wanted the workers to lie to investigators and were coaching them to lie about the pay practices of the company and hinted or outright threatened that they would call immigration on them.
Now, some of the legal remedies here include wage lien laws, which some states have adopted. Can you describe how that works? I mean, it seems very draconian, but in some ways, it's probably the only recourse that workers would have.
Yes, these laws exist in, I think it's 8 states now, and they're being considered by other states. What it would do is it would say that if you have a claim, you can file the claim on the assets of the employer, because these cases, if you do report them, take a long time to work their way through the system, sometimes months or even years, for you to get a hearing on a complaint, and therefore by the time you win, the company is out of business, or they're under new ownership, they're bankrupt, they've disappeared, and there's no way for you to collect. You hold a piece of paper saying you won, and that's it. So the wage lien laws are designed to address that.
And I suspect all of this means that there's plenty of opportunity for you to do reporting on your investigative news site, Fair Warning. I mean, this is a wide open domain.
Yes, I think it is. And you know, particularly now, there's, you know, a lot of discussion of raising the minimum wage. And sometimes lost in that conversation is that many workers aren't getting the minimum wage that exists now, such as it is, through various means. One thing that we found a number of examples of is that workers will get a daily rate. You know, you're paid $50 a day for a certain job. There's nothing illegal about that. But if the number of hours you're expected to work average out to something under the federal minimum wage or the state minimum wage, that's a violation of the law. And that occurs fairly frequently, it appears.
Myron Levin is editor and founder of Fair Warning, a Los Angeles-based investigative news site. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.